Welcome to The Appleseed, the storytelling podcast from BYU Radio, where your family can gather for great stories from great storytellers in every episode. Stories bring us together, and we hope the stories on the show will spark memories and thoughts that you can share with the people you love. I'm your host, Sam Payne, and first up today, we've got a story about a rabbit that finds itself being chased by a pack of hounds. Tough spot, right? Who can the rabbit turn to for help? It'll surprise you. Here's Debs Newbold with a story called The Hare and the Farmyard, recorded live in the Appleseed Studio.
This is a story about a hare. I like stories about hares. I have plenty of them. This is one of my favourites. Now, the hare had grown tired of living by herself in her form up on the high moor, and she'd come down the hill and she'd settled into a farmyard. Now, this might seem strange to you. Hares are generally solitary creatures, but this hare craved company. She knew that she was a hare who was followed and chased, as many hares are. So the company of others was welcome to her. And the animals in the farmyard, they accepted her. She fitted in nicely. She was no trouble. And so they lived together as neighbours and friends. One day, the hare woke up from a peaceful sleep and she heard something. Her keen ears heard it before any other creature did. It was the sound of hounds. And when you are being chased, and when hounds are coming for you, you will hear them before anyone else does. She knew they were coming for her. She knew they were off in the distance, but they would be here soon. And she always knew that they would be there. Eventually they would find her, but she hoped it wouldn't be so soon. She could hear them coming a little closer, but she still had time. And she thought she'd ask her friends to help her. So first she went to the goat, and she said to the goat, "Please, my friend, the hounds are coming, and they're coming for me. Could you take me on your back? I know that you can buck and skip and jump and move quite swiftly. You can take my scent, lift it from the floor by carrying me on your back, take me to somewhere to hide, just until they've been and gone. When they don't find me here, they will leave. Please, will you help me?" And the goat said, "Oh, my friend, I would love to help you. I really would. But you see, my back is weak. It's a very weak back. I don't think I could even take the weight of you upon it. I'm so sorry, I can't help. But you're among friends here. There are plenty who you can ask for assistance." "Yes, yes, of course," said the hare. "Of course. Don't worry." So then she went to the ram. And she said to the ram, "Please, the hounds are coming. They're coming for me. Will you help me? Will you help me figure out a plan? Perhaps a place in this farmyard that I can hide where they won't be able to sniff me out? You're so wise. You've been here a long, long time. Could you help me?" And the ram said, "Oh, I would love to help you, my friend, but you should know as well as anyone that a hound is just as likely to eat a sheep as a hare. And I can't put myself at risk like that. I'm sorry. But there are others that you can go to. You're among friends here." "Yes, yes," she said. "Don't worry. It's okay." So then she went to the bull and she said to the bull, "Please, the hounds are coming, they're coming for me. And you're so huge. You have these horns that are so terrifying. Could you not just turn your horns down towards the hounds and I could stand behind you and you would frighten them off? I swear, I guarantee it, you would frighten them and they would leave and they would probably not come back. You'd be so terrifying." And the bull said, "Oh, I'd love to help you, I really would, but I'm sorry, I have an appointment at the cowshed. It's my job, my duty. I have to go and do my work. But there are other people here that you can ask, right? You're among friends." "Yes, yes, of course, you have to do your job." So the bull swaggers off towards the cowshed, and over his shoulder, almost as an afterthought, he said, "Why don't you go and ask the Shire horse?" "Of course, the Shire horse, of course." So she goes to the stables where the Shire horse stands majestic, and she can hear the hounds now. They're closer, much closer. She knows that they are soon going to be inside the woodland that surrounds the farmyard. She almost expects to smell them soon. And so she tries to control her panic and she says to the shy horse, please, you are so majestic. And the hounds, they're coming for me. And please, all I ask is that I can stand in the folds of your tail or behind one of your front legs, your forelocks. I could hide behind one of those. You could hide me and protect me and tell them to leave me alone. And the shy horse said, I'd love to help you. Yes, of course, I'd love to help you, but I have a master, and he waits for me in the house. I have loads to bear. I can't keep my master waiting. Of course, said the hare. And the shy horse loped off towards the house where the farmer was waiting for him. And the only creature around that the hare could see to ask was the calf. And the calf was newborn, a day old. And the hare was about to ask the question, but she saw the calf looking at her with rheumy, newborn eyes, and she could tell what the calf was thinking. If creatures bigger and older, wiser and more powerful than me are unable to help you, then what can I do? And the hare walked outside. She could smell the hounds now as well as hear them. Soon they would be here. Soon they would be on her. And she looked around at this place that she'd chosen as her home with these creatures that she had counted as her friends. And something rose inside the hare. And it felt like a sob. But it wasn't a sob. It wasn't anger. Wasn't even fear. It was a voice. And the voice inside the hare said, you have legs, girl, don't you? Run. So the hare ran. She's still running. Thank you.
That was Debs Newbold and her story, The Hare and the Farmyard. I don't know where a story like that might take you, but it takes me to the part of my life when I loved to watch the Super Friends on Saturday morning cartoons. Superman, Wonder Woman, Batman and Robin, Aquaman, the Wonder Twins, Zan and Jaina, and their pet Space Monkey. And it seemed like anywhere in the whole world, when something big or difficult or scary was happening, the Super Friends would leave the Hall of Justice and rush to wherever help was needed. And that wasn't a whole lot different than my actual life when I was a kid. Not that anyone in my life had superpowers, but when something was big or hard or scary, when there was help to be looked for, that help would often come. Sometimes it would come from my folks, sometimes from teachers or other important people in my life. There was always help, always someone to come and scoop me up and get me to safety, someone who would come along and fix stuff. Well, fast forward a couple of decades. Some of the marks of being a grown-up begin appearing in my life. I get my own car. I get my own library card. Eventually, I get my own place to live, and I graduate from college, and I get married, and I start to have a family of my own, kids and everything. And it was probably because of the way things were when I was a kid that, as a grown-up, when something big or hard or scary happened, I had the impulse to look around for someone who might help, someone who would come along and fix stuff. For a moment, I might have wondered who was going to swoop in and scoop me up and get me to safety, but then I would see the faces of my kids, and guess who they were looking at? They were looking at me. I was the grown-up, the guy to fix stuff. Like Debs Newbold's rabbit in the farmyard, I learned, like everyone else does, that sometimes when things get tough, it's your own arms and legs and brains that are the ones that come in handy when it comes to helping. Helping yourself, helping your family. That the super friend best equipped to save the day might be you. And that's where Deb's story took me. Where did it take you? And who will you take along?
Live the conversation is guaranteed when we listen to stories on the Appleseed.
I want to introduce you to another show from the BYU Radio family of podcasts. It's called The Lisa Show, and it's hosted by comedian, believer, actor,
actress, single mother, Lisa Valentine Clark. The Lisa Show delves into the multitude of challenges and relationships that shape our lives, whether it's parenting, mental health questions, social issues. She and her council of moms will tackle it. She'll help you figure out this thing called life with a lot of laughs along the way. Lisa is a great person to hang around with. The Lisa Show. Listen wherever you get your podcasts. You can find it on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, all kinds of places to listen to The Lisa Show whenever you like. The Lisa Show from BYU Radio.
Simultaneously laughing, we're all agreed that we love, love, love the Appleseed.
Welcome back to the Appleseed. Next up, we have kind of an unusual story from Sheila Arnold about the opportunities to change for the better and the consequences of not changing when maybe you should. Here's Sheila with The Steel Cane.
This is an Armenian folktale, and I found it in the book called The Olive Fairy Book, edited and compiled by Andrew Lang. And you can find it online, and you can read it as well. The woman lived on a good parcel of land. She had her own home. She had orchards, and she had grain that was grown, a good-sized vegetable garden. And she had a nice stream that went by her. She had cows, and she had horses. She was a kind woman. She gave to the villagers, and although the villagers often thought how lucky she was, she gave well, and she didn't put herself above anybody. But she also didn't marry. As she got older, she became lonely. She really wished that she had someone to pass down what she had, too. Well, unfortunately, and maybe fortunately, unfortunately, there was a farmer and a wife in a small house, and their house burned to the ground, and they burned with it, but their child lived. He was a boy. He was about 12 years old, and the woman immediately opened her arms and her house and thought, yes, come live with me. And so the boy came to live with her, and it wasn't long before she realized this was a horrible idea. He was not the most easygoing kid you've ever seen. He was rather obstinate, stubborn-willed, difficult, didn't listen, didn't show up when he was supposed to, and he was a terror. But she loved him anyhow. She loved and she loved and she poured that love out as much as she could all the time. He did not change. He grew up, he began to hang around with a group of boys that were just as obstinate, just as stubborn-willed, just as difficult, and he became a man. And not only was he obstinate, stubborn-willed, and difficult, he was lazy. He didn't even go get a job. Stayed at home with his mom until he began to start dating. And so then he met a woman. The mother was finally happy because she knew that marriage would calm him down. New word on the street, if you hadn't heard. Marriage does not do that to people. And so he was still obstinate, stubborn-willed, difficult, and lazy in his mother's house with a wife who had to go to work in order to help out. And he didn't change. And then she had a baby. They had a baby. And he was no kinder to the baby until he became abusive and harmful to both his wife and his child. Oh, the mother had had it one day. Had it. And so one day when he came in yelling and screaming at the top of his lungs after he had come back home after carousing with his friends, roaming around and doing things with his obstinate friends, she reached over into the corner and she picked up a steel cane that had just been sitting there. Just a cane that someone walks with, but a steel cane. She picked it up and she knocked him over the head with it. And he turned into a donkey. And she said, now, you will be beat and you will be put hard to work and people will be difficult with you. You will see what it feels like. And not knowing what to do, well, the door was open and out he went. And there he stood in front of the house, not knowing what to do because he was a donkey now. And so a man walked by and said, well, whose donkey are you? No one seems to own you. And so he took the donkey and he left with it. And indeed, that donkey was put to work. He was beat daily. He was worked hard. He could not be lazy at all. And that stubborn streak, well, the master of the donkey was just as stubborn. But after 7 years, he turned back into himself. And then there was a knock, 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 knock on the door. And the wife, still with the mother, and opened the door, saw her husband, and slammed the door shut. What should we do? And the mother said, this is his home. He has to come back. Because the mother had said, when he left, the mother had said to herself, I hope he changes. I hope he changes. But he may not. So the door was opened, and he came in. A day, one full day, was all the goodness he had inside of him. And he went back to being obstinate and stubborn-willed and difficult and lazy and hanging out with his friends anymore. And then he told his friends what happened to him and that he'd been turned into a donkey and treated badly. And all his friends said, oh, well, you should just make them really pay for it now. And he became more cruel. He moved out his wife and his child, and now in their own home together, he was even more cruel. Until one day, the wife and the child ran out of their house, ran to the mother-in-law's house and told what had been happening to them. And the man came in after she picked up that steel cane and hit him upside the head, and he turned into a wolf. And she said, you will be hunted day and night, and you will feel it. You will be hungry, and you will understand it. And he leapt out the window, and he went into the woods, and he was hunted day and night. He could barely sleep. He didn't know what to do next. And that was his life for 7 years. And the mother had said as he went out, I hope he changes, but he might not. 7 years later, he came back, and he was worse than ever, telling his friends what he had become, telling how life was so difficult. He would look at his mother, he would look at the wife and the child, and he grew angry all the time. Angry, 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 until one day he exploded and he came for his mother with his hands out as if he would choke her or smack her. And she leaned back and she picked up that steel cane and hit him again. And she said, this will be your last. And he turned into a crow. And out the window he went. They all breathed a sigh of relief. But he went, the crow did, to his friends. And through some interpretation, he was able to help his friends understand who he was. And it was the mother who had done it. And his friends got up from their place that they had been sitting, and they said, we'll do something about her. And with the crow leading the way, the boys, the men, they came down the road, ready to get to that woman. And the door they threw open, but the woman was ready. She had her steel cane, and she hit each one of them. And they became a flock of crows, which I think is actually called a murder. And they flew about. Fortunately, they were no longer men. They would sometimes drop down where people were, take people's things, and people would shoo them away or shoot at them, and that's how they lived their life. And the wife was sad, and she looked at her mother-in-law and said, why? Why didn't he change? And she said, experience is not what changes people. Every individual must choose to be changed by experience.
That was Sheila Arnold with a story called The Steel Cane. And this story really got us thinking about choices and responsibility. And we decided to reach out to Sheila to ask her what the story means to her.
I think that actually is the message, is what the wife and the mom feel, is that they have given him opportunities to change. They've given him ways that he can change, but he chooses not to. And so when he chooses not to, he has to survive with the consequences of that, which means eventually he loses his wife and his mother. And then even his friends who encouraged him lose their own natural lives as men and become, all of them become crows at the end. Sometimes the lesson is to help people as much as you can. But in the end, when they choose not to, you have to choose to go ahead and have life yourself. It's a truthful fairy tale. It's not like a lot of fairy tales that kind of drift into, and then they changed and everything was good and they lived happily ever after. It's a story of truth that this sometimes happens. So you have to continue to take care of yourself, take care of those you love, and if necessary, have boundaries between you.
Sheila Arnold, with a few comments about the story, The Steel Cane, a story you just heard. And have you ever had a hard time making a change? Was there a time when you were the one who had to get yourself out of a tough spot? Did you ever face real consequences for choices you'd made? I bet you've got some stories, and we hope you'll share them with the people you love. In fact, we hope you'll share the stories with us, and we might share them in the show. For example, a longtime listener, Jan Smith, sent in a memory of hers after listening to a story called Pig Wisps, told in an episode of The Appleseed by the storyteller Angela Lloyd. And in that story, Angela talked about how a clam takes the constant irritation of a grain of sand and turns it into a pearl, a blessing. And Jan wrote, "This reminded me of my adolescent irritation at my dad's constant reminder to stand up straight and don't be a slumper. I was the tallest girl in every class photo growing up. I wanted to hide my extra inches. And now I look back at my dad's scolding and realize it was a blessing. I get a lot of compliments now on my great posture. Thanks, Dad." Well, thanks, Jan, for sharing that memory with us. If you'd like to share a memory or just comment on the show, you can email us at theappleseed@byu.edu. That's theappleseed, all one word, @byu.edu. Or you can leave a comment on any podcast platform you like, wherever you happen to be listening to this episode. We want to thank Debs Newbold and Sheila Arnold for their tales today. You've listened to their stories. Now it's time to share some of your own.
The Appleseed is produced by me, Sam Payne, Wendy Folsom, Brian Tanner, and Kira Van Dam. The rest of the Appleseed team is Tristan Schetzel, Kay Hendricks, and Nico Wetzel. We're pleased and proud to be among the many podcasts produced by the BYU Radio family of shows. If you want more great storytelling for the whole family, then search for our companion podcast, Kaboom, where you'll hear original audio adventures for the whole family. You can find any episode of The Appleseed or Kaboom on YouTube, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, on the BYU Radio app, or at byuradio.org. Don't forget to subscribe, rate us, and leave a review. That's how shows grow. I'm Sam Payne, and we can't wait to be with you again